it's important to know that we're not like in that jail that we create for ourselves. And you know, Glenda, you said how we have to validate ourselves and see. You know, I have a friend, he bought a Porsche, and when he's drunk, he's telling me that he enjoyed it for like a week or two, and now he can't sell it because what would other people think?
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the You Versus You podcast, where I talk with members of the Council for Human Development and the connected community about how we can expand our minds and recode reality. Hey, Brenda, David, and Glenda, thank you so much for joining me today. As you're joining for the first time, Glenda, I thought you can tell us something a little bit about yourself and also the beliefs and values you were raised with.
Okay, sure. Thank you, Anna. Well, I'm very glad to be here today. It's my first time. So a bit about myself. I'm from Singapore. All the while, born and bred in Singapore. The only time that I'm out of the country is when I'm studying overseas in Sydney. So that was in university. And that is the time where it opens up my world, because having been born in and raised up in an Asian family, since young, we were told what's right and what's wrong. And the thing is, we don't even have a chance to ask why we are supposed to do this. And I remember when I was young, I asked a lot of why, like why this and why not this, why that and why not the other. But my parents just say, just follow. Yeah. So this is quite frustrating for many of us, but I think because since everyone is doing the same thing, so we kind of don't think and just follow accordingly, just go with the flow. So, well, it's the same story as the rest of the folks. After university, we were told to, you know, get a job. In fact, I remember very clearly when I was in Sydney, I told my dad, I said, hey, I want to be a barrister, because during then, there's this coffee culture in Sydney, and I thought, hey, you know, it's pretty cool. And the way I observe all of them, they are so proud doing what they are doing, even the waiting staff. And I like that idea. And every time when I go into the restaurant, I receive a cup of coffee, I feel so welcome. It just made my day. So I told my dad, hey, you know, I want to, I graduated then. Hey, I want to be a barrister. I'd like to stay on. And he told me if I was to stay on, he's going to cut off all my finances. So I have no choice but to return back to Singapore and get a proper job. So I've been in the finance industry, this time in corporate, and the same thing, doing like what most of the employed people are doing, waking up at the same time, having the same breakfast, driving on the same road, year after year is the same. And I realized that, yes, financially, it does give us that kind of reward. But over the years, I find that I got very burnout and I can't become a zombie, because life has become meaningless. And I find that, hey, you know, life shouldn't be like this. And if, let's say, I were to continue with the rest of my life, I just can't face that. So I thought there must be something that, you know, out of what I'm doing. And of course, I wasn't exposed in anything. So I've been like going round and round and round. And at one point, a few years ago, I was in fact on depression. I was on medication. And it's really a dark place that I don't think anyone wants to go there.
And as you mentioned, you were raised in the beginning to follow, and you were taught what is wrong and what is right. Can you give us some of the examples of what you were taught that is right and what is wrong? And I think it's also funny that you mention that you had to get a proper job, and that you, in your language, a barista wouldn't be a proper job. So maybe yeah. Tell us a little bit about your viewpoint there as well.
Okay. So what happened was when I was raising up, when I was, you know, because both my parents, my dad is an entrepreneur, and my mom, she gave up her career to be a stay-at-home mom. So she taught us. And she's very strict about how we should behave. So for example, Like, okay, put an example. When I was young, I remember that I like to play with my neighbors and I like to do sleepover. So I asked my mom, I say, hey, you know, can I do a sleepover at my neighbor's place? My mom said, no. I asked her, why not? So she said, because it's not nice for a girl to do a sleepover in, you know, a neighbor's place. And especially as a girl, I mean, of course, I understand where she's coming from because of the security issues, safety issues. Yeah. So this is just one aspect of it. And I also remember that when I was young, about 9 years old, my friend said, hey, Glenda, let's go for a movie. I said, great, let's do that. And I told my mom, I asked her, hey, I'd like to go for a movie with my friend. She said, no. I asked her, why not? And she told me that, okay, because in the movie, it's dark. You never know who's sitting beside you. That kind of thing. Yeah. So it's, I mean, that is pretty, I don't, because I'm not a parent, so I can't really relate to it. But I feel that to some certain extent, there should be some, you know, freedom, that kind of thing. Yeah. And if I ask, okay, so back to your question, another question on a proper job. Now, in this Asian context, a proper job means to say that you get employed, you receive a decent salary. And in their view, it's like an office job. So something like 9 to 5, you get so-called a decent pay. And to them, they view as serving others. It's not like a proper job. It's like, you know, you're having fun with it. And to them, in their view, this job is not stable. That kind of thing. I don't know whether you guys can relate to that.
And when was the time for you that your inner world started changing and you started questioning things more and exploring consciousness?
I would say that when, importantly, I feel that environment is so, so important. We can't emphasize, enough of it. When I was studying in Sydney, I was exposed to a word that everybody speak up. And for example, in Singapore, you can never see people going on strike. People were not, in Singapore, they will not raise their view publicly. Okay. Because this was never allowed in Singapore. So I remember ever since when I was young, I've never seen what strike is going on unless it's on TV. So you can see I'm living in a perfect world. But until when I'm overseas in Sydney, I realized, hey, you know, even in the university environment, people do voice up, you know. So I start to question, hey, you know, why isn't this happening where I was born? Does people really, are they really happy with the current environment? And if they are not happy about it, why don't they raise up? A very good example, I would say, is, whenever I'm in a cab in Singapore, you will realize that all this driver, they have a lot of grievances. They have a lot of unpleasant within them. And that's the reason why they like to chit-chat with the passenger. They like to voice out their point of view. And I guess this is their only means of releasing themselves. So I remember once I asked a taxi driver, hey, you know, why don't you just speak up? They say, in Singapore, we are not allowed to do that, which is true, which is so true. So I would say that my consciousness really happened when I was in overseas during the university. But I guess when I'm back to Singapore, and when you're back in that environment, this whole thing, I mean, the whole environment, you got so overwhelmed that you've forgotten about this. And you are just, you get so blinded. And you get blinded by your goals, your aspirations, so-called, peer pressure. And you start, this question, the voice of questioning, start to be drawn by what's going on around you. And you find that, okay, all these things don't matter after all. Until when, many, many years later, you just feel, you know, there's something within you that needs to be exploded out, and it's just too much to bear. And this question will start to come back again and again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I think David and Brenda, you can both relate to different views because you were also both abroad. And I think that also started a process for you to question things. David, can you tell us a little bit, what are the factors that you identified that were holding you back to live your whole potential?
Yeah. Hey, first, Glenda, you know, I admire you a lot because I've said it before. We've had, we talked to Sarah, who has a religious background, that was very tough for her to, you know, as a woman to really come to those conclusions that you have come. And I have a lot of respect because for me, it was easier because my, you know, the upbringing was like nice and shiny. It was like, you know, there was not like big obstacles, but what I had is that I get bored really fast. So, and I actually think that the permanence that we create in our life, that we don't want to give up like old stuff to try something new, that is blocking us on a lot of occasions. And basically I started working in the bank without, I didn't know any of this. And I just saw the people there, how, you know, I started new and I was full of enthusiasm. I read some books and let's do this, you know, and I got stopped from every angle. Whatever I tried, it's like, oh, you know, go sit and wait and do that and do this. And I started to hang out with them. I saw their relationships that they're having. I saw the conversations that they're having. And, you know, I just told myself, I was 28 or something. I was like, this is not what I want. I don't want to fight with my wife all the time. I don't want to, you know, have to get out of the house because I can't stand the kids. I don't want to always complain. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, put others down. And that's just, it's not what I wanted. And then I started, you know, discovering. And once you start asking the right questions, as we know, the answers will come. And so it was pretty, you know, it's a lot smoother, I think, but that's why I have so much respect for people like Glenda, and you know, my girlfriend now also, she's from Kosovo and brought up, from what I've heard, very traditionally, and you know, but it builds character. I have to tell you, she's like, you know, she knows what she wants. She's like the head of the family, like, you know, she runs stuff because she's confident now, and so it's super cool. And I, you know, have tremendous respect for, but it's just saying that there's hundreds, thousands, millions of ways how to get there. So, you know, there's no right and wrong, but respect.
But because you also mentioned your girlfriend, don't you think that if you then overcome it, that you're just like way stronger than other people who had an easier path?
Yeah, that's a good question. Look, if you're, for example, born into a super rich family, you know, we know, and it's proven that there's a big difference, somebody getting rich by actually putting in work, you know, like the American dream, or somebody being born into a rich family and becoming a brat. But I'm saying that, you know, just because somebody is born into a rich family, I'm not saying that I'm born into a rich family, but it was like pretty supportive environment. But let's say, as long as I still make that shift and I want to go to the same direction as Glenda does, I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. It would be like a waste of human potential if you just sit there, you think everything is given to you and you stop developing. Because I really, that's the problem. People, when they think they have everything, they stop learning, they stop evolving. And that's when life's over. It's going to get boring.
Brenda, can you tell us a little bit how your environment shaped you and supported you in overcoming, in living your full potential, basically?
Yeah, so also a lot of respect for you, Glenda, that you are here, even though you come from such a background. And mentioning that, so I come from a country which is very open-minded, very supportive. So there, even you are in a bad state, you feel limited, you feel all this pain inside, you will always have someone to support you. So it's on a good side, it's good, but on the other side, it's also like it's such a safe place that you don't have to overcome something. You don't have to work on yourself to actually get somewhere happy, because you feel so supported and you feel so much love around. Also on the streets, you feel so much intimacy with the people that you don't even know, that you don't feel that need to actually get out of where you are. Because even though you are not, you are lean, but you are not super unhappy because you have all that around you. And for me, when I came here, it's when everything started. I started realizing how much of my insight was needing to grow and to change. And I realized that through Switzerland, through a different culture, which is more or was more close, very focused, very square. And so it started of me thinking, oh my God, I don't have what they have. I am not that what they are. So I started to wish to conform or to wish to be something that I was not. And there is where the whole path started.
And for you, because you say that where you come from, people are more open and everyone is also more connected just on the streets. So how was for you the difference? Because I can imagine that you feel kind of more warmth and belonging over there compared to Switzerland.
Totally. Yes. Yes. It's still challenging. Here I have found all the ways of feeling that connection and feeling that belonging. And in the beginning, I found it out on the bad way, because I was trying then to integrate.
Yeah.
I was trying to conform to what they could handle. And so I completely minimized all what I was. So I suppressed Brenda to actually fit into this society.
Yeah.
And then I to the point where I thought, oh my God, if this is integration, it feels like being dead.
Okay.
It really felt like that. If I'm conforming to feel integrated into this culture, I'm killing myself slowly. And over the past weeks since I started the program Council for Human Development, I've realized that what I have been doing. So now it's finding my way, accepting me again, who I am, with all of my intensiveness and everything that I have, accepting it and saying, hey, this is who I am. If the culture likes it or not, I respect how they are, but I don't conform anymore to what they want me to be.
And were there certain thoughts that especially helped you in that time to accept yourself and also to let free of who you are and stop suppressing?
It helped me, the thing of what Cairns usually says, people think they think, but they don't think. That helped me a lot. And the webinars that we have been having and listening to what is going on people's minds, even though they have a career, even though they are from a very developed country and so on, to actually see that other people also have internal issues. And they know a lot of things, but they are still not happy. That helped me a lot to say, hey, maybe knowing all of that stuff doesn't actually help me.
Yeah.
That completely changed my perspective.
And I think, Glenda, you can also maybe relate to this, because I can imagine that you, in how you grew up, that you were also partly suppressing who you really are. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, in fact, because in Singapore, they emphasize a lot on education. And in fact, like David, I do swim competitively in school, but this wasn't very encouraged, because first of all, the government don't support us at all. And my mom said, hey, you know, you can forget about that.
Get a job.
Yes. So I can fully understand. And also, see, when I was growing up, I have different aspiration, different aspect of it, which I think, like, we got bored easily. We want to try something. But we would just, my mom would just say, you know, don't think about it. Just focus on study. And the rest, in future, you'll be fine. But what is the definition of fine? Because in their mind, they just say that, okay, you go into a good company and you can find someone and you marry and you give birth to child, you know, you live happily for the rest of your life. But, you know, the thing is, I don't conform, first of all, because, yes, I'm married, but it's everyone, after the moment you got married, people will ask you, when are you having the first kid? You know, when are you going to, you're not getting younger and younger. But the thing is, I just ask myself, okay, what is the reason behind it? There must be a right reason. See, this is just my way of it. I mean, luckily I have a supportive husband, so it's not too bad. And so in Singapore, a lot of times it's really the way we behave. We also are very aware of our peer pressure. So we strive so that we can show to our peers that we are doing well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of going on. Yeah.
And David, can you tell us what your experiences were? Because I can also imagine that during your time in banking, you were also suppressing a part of who you really are.
Yeah, I didn't really suffer. I just thought, like, okay, I'm young and okay, I don't know it. They must know. And it's a bit different than what I've learned and what I've read in the books. And I just, my enthusiasm for it went down because in the beginning I was like learning a lot. But then, well, that was one of the big things. After 2 years, you know, when I first started, it was all new connections. It was new programs. I had like 6 big screens. It was Bloomberg, like all these cool things that, you know, you go to school and you're like, wow, you see like those trading floors and that's what you want, you know? And then you're there and you have it and you learn and you go to nice restaurants all of a sudden, you know, you drink nice wine and all. So it's like splashy stuff and you get sidetracked. And then, but the more you do that, the more, you know, normal it becomes, the more you're being focused on materialistic stuff. Then you say, okay, I worked hard all year. You know, I didn't suffer. I didn't say I suffered, but I put in a lot of work that I would have spent somewhere else probably if I had the choice. So I'm going to buy myself something nice now with the bonus. I'm going to treat myself to this and that. So it's becoming this, you know, I wrote a short paper a while ago. I never published it, but it was Escaping the Golden Cage. Mm-hmm. Because in Switzerland, it's a bit like that. You know, you have that, you're in golden cage, mm-hmm. And you can't get out. And I'm not, you know, for some people, you know, I had a lot of discussions about it and they say, well, but some people love their golden cage. All right, fine. But what I'm saying is that still, if you have the option to open the door and have the door open, so at all times you can go out and you know there's the possibility to go out, you know, that's cooler than if it's closed and it's a golden cage. And there's an analogy. But what happened to me was I started to get bored. I saw, okay, I'm doing the same stuff after 2 years of speaking to the same people. And then artificial intelligence, you know, people were being let go from other banks. And I started to think as well, not that I was scared, but I started to think and it's like, yeah, what I'm doing, you know, it could easily be replaced and if they wanted to. And so then, you know, my boss didn't necessarily like me that much because I was, you know, trying to innovate, which was not to his liking. So he wanted to stay in his garden, and then things added up and I got angry and I left. But the analogy was with tiger and the golden cage. I think it's quite a good one. If you imagine a tiger that's been in a circus, you know, performing the, I don't know how you call that, maneuvers or you know, the things in front of the public. The tiger is the cage, and you could imagine if you just take that cage and put it in front of like a forest, a wild forest where the tiger could go out, and you open the door, maybe, you know, the tiger will like confusedly look around, but it will just like sit there, or maybe like look outside and go back in the cage. You know, it will take probably a long time until the tiger actually, you know, its courage is enough to go out of the cage, maybe look back one more or two more time, and then actually peace out and, you know, take off and go into freedom. And but that analogy, you know, the golden cage, just you know that there is a door. And so I think it's always better to have more options for you. So if you can't open it, you can still stay in it or half in it or keep coming back, whatever you want. But it's important to know that we're not like in that jail that we create for ourselves. And you know, Glenda, you said how we have to validate ourselves and see, you know, I have a friend, he bought a Porsche. And when he's drunk, he's telling me that he, you know, he enjoyed it for like a week or two. And now he can't sell it because what would other people think? And, you know, I was like, man, you really, if that is your problem, like, I'm sorry, but, you know, I trying to help, but they don't see it at that moment. So it's a bit tough, but it's not such a cool problem to have, to not being able to sell the Porsche because of what other people think. Not so cool.
But because you say escaping the golden cage, and that seems to be a comfortable place. So what do you think are the benefits if someone breaks out?
Adventure. Mm-hmm. Adventure, like the energy for life comes back. It's like you're meeting new people. You're going to eat new foods. You're going to try new drinks. You're going to go to new places. You're going to talk about new topics. You're going to everything. It changes. And really, it was the same as in swimming. When I was swimming, I thought, wow, I swam next to Michael Phelps. I met him and we play poker and that's it. But when you go outside of swimming, you realize this is like a small bubble. It's like literally, you know, nobody else cares about swimming unless it's like the Olympics. Nobody cares. But I thought this is it. And then I was in banking and you're like, you know, I go to the military 3 weeks a year. And, you know, the people, they don't even know, have no idea where the euro trades to the Swiss franc. They have no clue that there's, you know, that many currencies. Like, nobody cares. So I was, again, in that bubble, and I thought that's all there is. And you get caught in it. But once you open yourself, and that's basically what we're saying, just expand your mind in whatever topic that is. If it's your mind, if it's relationships, is it food? Is it where we come from? Is it what can we do in the world? Hey, it doesn't matter. Expand your mind. And it take like holistic, and that's fun. And it's really, you're growing. And that's why we're here. We're here to learn, evolve, and grow. And that's what you do when you put yourself into new situations. Just look at the people that travel a lot. Why do you think everybody loves traveling? Why do you think like the people that go from one culture like Brenda and come to another one, why do they grow so much? Why do they go back to Mexico and they have a completely like a new, you know, they have new insights that Mexican people that live there all the time will probably not have. And so, yeah, it's growth, it's adventure.
And you said you never published that article. Why not?
Good question, because I took some of the sentences weren't mine. I didn't want to get in trouble.
And Brenda, did you have any experiences when it comes to escaping the golden cage?
Oh, it was... Well, what I've realized yesterday, it's we go through darkness, or to get to light, we have to go through darkness. And that's it. If you are afraid of darkness, if you don't want to go through darkness, you are setting yourself away from light. So you are choosing to stay already in the dark because you are not moving. So for me, that was a big breakthrough yesterday, and getting out of the cage is just the best thing someone can do. You realize that the things that were holding you on inside the cage, they were just illusions, and they were so easy once you were ready to see that, mm-hmm. Once you were ready to really open the door and say, okay, now I'm opening, and whatever it's there, it can come, I'm ready to see it. Once you get that decision, you see the things and it's like, oh, but it's not that bad. I mean, it was horrible as I thought about it, mm-hmm. But once I dare to see it and go through it, it's like, okay, it's not that bad. So it's just liberating and great.
Can you share some of the illusions that really got to you?
So one illusion, it's one of the hardest ones, I guess, in my whole life. It's the fact that I grew up believing that my father has left us. And we never spoke about my father in my family. Never. I met him when I was 7 years old, and I never wanted to see him again. So he had another family, and I started building my own story. Okay, he left because he chose another woman, and he built a better family than what we had before. That's the story that I built for myself. Not true. That was not the truth. And I overheard my mom talking once when I was maybe 25, and it was a completely different story. And I was like, what? So that what I have been believing my whole life, it was not true. And since then, I mean, the truth will release you. And since then, it's like every time going out of these illusions that are just not real.
And you found out the truth when you were 25. How come that there was no moment before that you ever talked with your mom about it or with someone from your family, and that somehow it started questioning everything?
So my father was a taboo in my family. It was a subject not to touch because it was so sensitive. My sister would get very, she would get affected about the subject. I didn't want to touch a subject with my mom because I thought it would hurt her if I would come and ask her. My grandmother, no. My uncles, no. Everyone, and if I would ask something, they would say, he's an asshole. That was the only answer. So there was no way.
So do you have currently a relationship with your dad?
I don't. I don't have it, but I'm open to it. And yeah, I don't hate him anymore, which is very liberating.
So that feeling for you changed. Why isn't there really the action to build the relationship that you let go of this illusion?
Well, he's in Mexico to begin with. And I don't have his phone number or anything, but if I go to Mexico, I will for sure try to find him.
And Glenda, can you maybe share some of the illusions that you were fighting with that had a big influence on your life?
I would say that because of all those beliefs that we were paint since young, that my parents keep telling us that, okay, we have to go through the proper, so-called the system. Don't be an entrepreneur, because entrepreneur's life is not great. High risk. I've seen how my dad's life is, which is true, but the thing is, it's also rewarding as well. We were told that, okay, the best job, the best industry is finance. So in Singapore, just go to finance, which is true because we are very, pretty highly paid in the finance industry. But the thing is, when I'm in this finance industry, I realize that everybody is putting a mask on. They are like fraud. Sometimes they don't know what they are doing. And the only so-called goals that they have is fighting on the material stuff, comparing with each other. And that is pretty meaningless. And so I initially, when I was in the industry, I have this illusion. I thought that, okay, this is a very glamorous job, like what David mentioned. I have the ability to enjoy the finest thing in life. But think of this, we are actually using our time in exchange of income. So if you break down to per hour, basically it's not that great after all. Yeah, and right now it's also very high risk environment because of compliance issue. So if you get a very unhappy client, perhaps the client might decide to sue you for wrong advice. So that could be it. So I realized that these are some of the illusions that was painted along the way. And I just feel that, importantly is for us, being employed is not the only route. We should be free to explore other you know, to pursue our own interests. I think this is something that's being suppressed in most of the population. I can't say that it's worldwide. But as far as Singapore is concerned, it's really very suppressed. So it's only until recently, you know, governments start to have this awareness. That's why in terms of our population, we have a lot of employed and very few entrepreneur. But if you look at those entrepreneurs, their background, because they have very good you know, family support, because they are born in a rich family. They kind of like automatically, you know, being passed down or being hand over by the, you know, to take over this family business. Yeah. So I would say that this is one of the illusions that was given to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for someone that really wants to start identifying their own illusions and wants to overcome them, David, do you have any tips on some kind of ritual or process that personally helped you that someone can apply?
Yeah, well, at the moment, I think the simplest thing right now is to use the what happened with Corona and just start take the situation, assume that you don't know anything, as we most of us don't, and just assume to widen your horizon. So see what material is out there, see what different people say, and you will see that, you know, there is the range of what is possible, it's huge. So the truth is anywhere from super dark to super bright, and it's somewhere in between. And so chances are, I'm guessing that somebody has like an opinion maybe somewhere in the middle, and that, you know, that this is the truth is very, 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 very unlikely, because we don't know, we don't have a way to measure it. So what I'm suggesting is, if, you know, this is not the truth, then what we can do is, you know, as always, it's not black and white. So we just look at what the options are. And when you do that, you know, for a banker, for example, I always, you know, I was meeting one of my friends yesterday and I told him about the Fed, the American Central Bank. So how it's, you know, privately controlled and owned basically through the New York Fed, and, you know, how it's, when it was founded, how a lot of the opposition, super rich people died in the Titanic, all in 1913, all these things, like, I had no idea. When I was working for a bank, he was working for a bank for 20 years and he had no idea. So I sent him a paper. And, you know, I think this is, if they take it seriously, and if people, well, you need to be in an open, you need to be ready to accept, because otherwise you'll just fight everything. If the ego, if you're acting. So I think we wanted to mention the shadow self, the ego, you know, that basically makes us think that we are all that we can be and what we know is true. And so we get a little bit defensive and maybe a bit aggressive if other people, you know, show us evidence or show us information that doesn't suit our beliefs and what we grew up with, because it's challenging. But if you're up for it, then with the current crisis, you have like so much to look at. And, you know, there's material all over. I mean, LondonReal.tv is with Brian Rose. I like his Freedom Platform, for example. He has a lot of independent experts on it that give different views on vaccines, on the monetary, you know, policy, what is going on. And, you know, it's, you start to connect the dots, and you start, it's really like that system of a stepping stone. You take a step, because you're not afraid to stay where you are. So you're okay with going into the unknown. You don't need to have to control everything. So you're okay. You do that, and you start to see things in a different place. You start to see new things ahead of you. You start to see things in the back that happen. You start to understand, why did my brother flip out on me? You start to click, 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 click. And that's progress. And again, that makes us happy, because we are, I have no doubt in my mind that we are here to progress and to evolve, because that's what makes us happy too. And to do it together also, not to do it like alone, because it's quite boring. And so, yeah, use this current situation and just inform yourself and think about, that would be my tip. Think about what you want. What it, if, you know, assume that 5% is conscious thought, 95% is a autonomous program. Assume that, you know, this is proven until 6 or 7 years. As a kid, you have no conscious thought. So it's all downloaded. And so if you know, go see if that is true. And if it's true, think about, what does that mean for you? What does that mean for your first 7 years of your life? What were you told? Do you remember it? If you know, just think, and the answers will come.
Brenda, do you have anything that you would like to add? Any tips for someone?
Yeah, I would say that what I said before, there to step into the darkness and always knowing where you want to go. So I'm stepping into the darkness because I want to expand, because I want to get out of where I'm currently in. Not stepping into the darkness and I'm staying there. No, it's just I'm stepping into the darkness. I'm seeing what I'm afraid of seeing, but because I'm going to a brighter place. And that's just an ongoing work. That's my tip.
Glenda, do you also want to add anything?
Yeah, I would say that importantly, we have to face ourselves. We have to recognize, really, you know, rip off the ego. Because before this journey, I thought that, oh, you know, this is who I am. I'm very certain that this is what I want. But ultimately, I have to resign to the fact that, no, this is not. Because a lot of time, we have this fear in us and we don't dare to face that. So I would say that that first step of facing, like what Brendan said, facing that darkness is very important, because we know that, yes, we can be walking down to the tunnel, but we do see that light. It's just, you know, no matter how long it takes, we are going to reach there. So I would say that, you know, it's that courage. Yeah.
Agnes, what would you do to overcome illusions that we have? What would you do? How would you start?
What I would do, I think it's really important to put yourself in a different environment and to talk to the people that you admire. So, for example, for me, I just partly schedule virtual coffees with people that I admire and that have skills that I would like to have and that I know that are further in their personal development journey. And then I just talk to them about my own insecurities and also like the things that are holding me back. And these conversations are not easy sometimes because, yeah, you have to take a deep look in the mirror. But it also helps. I feel like it brings me further. And it's not an easy process, but I think it already starts by identifying what are the problem areas you have, or like what are the insecurities you have. So I think, like, for example, a lot of people have insecurities to talk to others or just to approach others because of titles or age. And that's also something that I was fighting with a year ago, but now I don't have it anymore. And I think that's a lot through communicating and taking small steps.
Mm-hmm. And you say it's not easy. It's not easy, but it needs to be safe. And that's why, like you say, virtual coffee, that's pretty cool. And I mean, with all that, you know, with all that we do, you know, we always say that it needs to be safe. It needs to be a safe environment, because making mistakes, being exposed is like the biggest, for a lot of people, it's the biggest worry that we have, right? To make mistakes, what will others think? And, you know, am I good enough and all these things? So when it's safe and we can share, in my opinion, that's the key to progress as well, the environment and the safety of it. Because it's not easy. We know it. But if it's safe, what do we have to lose? Nothing. And Simon, he said it really nice in the video. He's like, he would be the dumbest ass on this planet if he didn't like at least give it a try. And that, you know, it resonates with, I think, all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also what's not easy is that in the beginning, if you try to expose yourself a little bit and there's like a small thing that someone else does, you try to see everything to run away.
Yeah.
there's just a small thing and you personally make a big thing out of it and you're like, okay, no, that's not the person. Like, I'm leaving. Glenda, would you like to add anything to that?
I would say that through this platform, you will realize that the whatever we are facing, we are basically not alone. So the best thing is, because every one of us, we are at different stage and we have that different experience. So we could, in a way, with that experience and with our knowledge, to pull each other, to bring each other And also we can walk out of that tunnel faster towards the light, much faster. I think that's important. Yeah. So this is something that I find that, you know, because many a times when we are alone, we tend to magnify our own issue, thinking that, oh, you know, this is the only issue that I have in the whole world. Why is it got to be me? So a lot of, you know, me focus. But when we are in a group, you realize that, hey, you know, in fact, I'm not alone. And perhaps after talking, you will realize that whatever things that we are focusing on is actually, you know, just so tiny at the end. Yeah.
Thank you so much for all of your input today, everyone. And if you want to find out more, make sure to check out councilforhumandevelopment.org. And please share the podcast with your friends on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter with the hashtag Council for Human Development.